When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
The NBA playoffs rolls on with Anthony Edwards and the Minnesota Timberwolves facing the Dallas Mavericks in the Western Conference Finals. And to get there, they defeated the Denver Nuggets on Sunday in a game that averaged 8.4 million viewers on TNT. Game 7 of that second round series, the most watched first or second round NBA playoff game ever on TNT, believe it or not. Some out of home aspects with that as well, of course, but we'll dig into that and a lot more, including the ESPN broadcast of Pacers Knicks on the New Sports Media Watch podcast. My name is John Lewis. I'm joined by Drew Lerner. As always, if you have not already, please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. So let's dig into the ratings real quick, because most of the podcast will be about other issues. The Timberwolves Nuggets game, like I said, 8.4 million viewers. That is the largest first or second round playoff audience ever on TNT Sports. Caveat, of course, is out of home viewing. So 8.41 million for the game Sunday night. The previous record was 8.38 million for Orlando Boston in 2009. Obviously, no out of home viewing back then. You can reasonably surmise that with out of home viewing, that 2009 game would have probably comfortably had a larger audience. But, you know, officially, obviously, this year is the record. Great number, most watched game of the playoffs, the first game of the playoffs to hit the 8 million mark. Last year, there were a bunch of games that hit the 8 million mark. This year, this is the first one. And you have to feel some level of promise if you're the NBA vis-a-vis Anthony Edwards and Minnesota, especially playing a Dallas team that is also a star-laden team. This is not a small market series. I see a lot of kind of, you know, Minnesotans going, oh, we're a small market. No, you're not a small market. Minneapolis-St. Paul is not a small market. It is one of the top 15 markets in the country. It is a market where if you're working in local news in Minneapolis, you succeeded. They did a whole TV series about working in local news in Minneapolis, all right? It is a large television market. It's not top 10, but 15 is not small. They're taking on a Dallas market that is the number 5 market. So from a market perspective, this is pretty good. And I think if you're the NBA, it's better than Minnesota OKC would have been, and certainly much better than Denver. Denver-Dallas would have been okay. You got some superstars in that, Jokic and Doncic. But this is, I think, the best case scenario for the NBA. Once LeBron and all the other established stars were out, this was pretty much the best case. Not so much in the Eastern Conference, where the Indiana Pacers upset the New York Knicks. Obviously, I tend to agree with the perception that the Knicks would have advanced had Tom Thibodeau not run them into the ground. But here they are, they had nobody left by the end. But I'm not going to take anything away from the Pacers. You got to beat who's in front of you. If we're going to diminish what the Pacers have done, then we need to diminish a lot of NBA champions from the last few years as well. Indianapolis is also not a small market, but it's also not it's not Minneapolis. It's number 25, further down the list. So if you're working in local news, you would leave Indianapolis to get to Minneapolis, right? That would be a career stepping stone. And look, the reality is that when it comes down to it, the Pacers are a team that plays aesthetically pleasing basketball. This is not the Indiana Pacers of David West and Roy Hibbert. They play aesthetically pleasing basketball, but no one has paid any attention to them yet. I had the opportunity to go to the Pacer game on Friday and cover it. Asked Tyrese Haliburton about, you know, the TV exposure for this team heading into a Game 7.
Tyrese, you mentioned it before, Game 7 at the Garden. This is one of the biggest opportunities a player has in his career. One of the biggest audiences, really the biggest, that will ever watch you play so far in your career. Can you just speak to what it means to have this opportunity to showcase yourself and your team in front of such a big national audience?
It's just exciting. It's exciting for us. A lot of us, you know, this is our first playoff experience, let alone the first Game 7. You know what I mean? So I think we're all excited about it. We got to be ready to go for 48 minutes. Like, you know, the Garden is an unbelievable environment. And, you know, the crowd will be rowdy. And, you know, we just haven't won there yet. So we got to prove that we're able to do that. And I think it starts on the defensive side, being able to rebound the ball so that we can get out and run and things like that. But I'm really excited about the opportunity. You know, I think that, you know, when you're a young, up-and-coming team, it's easy to be like, man, we're never on TV. People never get to see us play. Well, you got to earn it. And I think we're on our way to doing that by winning the first-round series. But, you know, you can continue to do that by winning this series and, you know, hopefully playing the Eastern Conference Finals. So that stuff's earned, not given. And we got to, you know, prove that we deserve that spotlight to be able to do that.
You know, you have to earn it. You have to earn your way onto these big windows. Well, Indianapolis, the Pacers, they have earned their way into, you know, these primetime windows the next week, 2 weeks against Boston. The Celtics are the kind of team that will let you win a few games. And Indiana's a dangerous team. This is not Cleveland or Miami without Jimmy Butler. So maybe the Pacers can keep it going, but I would expect the Eastern Conference Finals will probably lag in viewership unless the games are just outstanding. Drew, I'll bring you in on that note.
Tyrese Haliburton, a little bit of a different tone to his answer there than Michael Malone would have given last year, in terms of earning the TV viewership, earning those TV windows. That's interesting that he has that perspective, perhaps a little bit of a more mature perspective than Michael Malone. But in any case, the thing that stands out to me about, you know, the four teams left, it's pretty Midwest heavy. You know, you have Indiana and Minnesota, and you're kind of leaving out the entire West Coast here, right? I mean, when Dallas and Minneapolis are your teams out of the West, you're not really probably endearing yourself to that California audience. But you do have Dallas, and I think Dallas is a big enough market to make up for that. What I'm interested to see, John, going into the finals is, would you sacrifice market size and want Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves in the finals versus keeping Dallas that large market and getting, you know, Luka Doncic, who himself is a pretty large draw, but perhaps not as promising long-term as Anthony Edwards. If you're the NBA, which would you prefer here?
There's no bad outcome. Either you get a big market Dallas team with stars and Doncic and Kyrie, or you get Anthony Edwards. The East is what's not pulling its weight. The West is actually this. I mean, it's interesting because at the start of the playoffs, you say, man, LeBron's out, no Steph, no KD. Well, KD was in, but didn't win a game. And the East has New York and Boston and Philadelphia. Well, the East has not pulled its weight at all. We end up with Boston, Indiana. Boston's played these awful series. I think most people think this is going to be like the Cleveland and Miami series. While the West has given us, you know, something really good from a TV perspective, and I think also from a fan perspective. So there's no bad outcome. If you end up with Dallas, the NBA is not going to be upset. A Dallas-Boston Finals does well. A Dallas-Boston Finals does well, and a Minnesota-Boston Finals does well. Now, if Indiana gets in, then you're going to have some trouble. And I mean no disrespect, but the league is not built up. It's not unlike 1994. If the Pacers had made the finals in 94, NBC would have had some real trouble. And they had some trouble anyway with the Knicks and Rockets. Same thing with 95. You know, the Pacers have always kind of been not that great of a draw. A lot of people don't realize this. The 2000 finals with the Lakers, the ratings were down for a lot of that series compared to San Antonio, New York the prior year, right? It was only because it went to a sixth game that it ended up outdrawing that series. The Pacers just don't draw that way. But maybe that changes. Maybe Tyrese Haliburton has one of those series. But he's not consistently like that. He's a lot like Butler, right? Where Butler had these amazing moments, but a lot of the times it's like Caleb Martin who's doing it. That's a little bit like, I mean, it's Nembhard half the time with Indiana, you know? So You need Halliburton, specifically Halliburton, to have a star turn. I don't necessarily know that that's going to happen.
When you're looking at the Game 7 numbers from the weekend, did they exceed your expectations or meet your expectations, or did they fall a little bit below expectations for you?
Well, neither game did as well as Boston-Philly last year, which was boosted by Mother's Day. But Pacers-Knicks was very underwhelming. $6.5 million for a second-round Game 7. I know, you know, the golf, that was pretty tough competition, but, you know, $6.5 million for that game is pretty underwhelming. We're going to dig more into that Pacers-Knicks from a broadcast standpoint coming up. But before we get into that, let's quickly go through the other weekend ratings. Caitlin Clark's ABC debut in the WNBA, not as big as a lot of people thought. So, you know, Richard Deitch was very high on that game, maybe getting to 5 million. And a lot of other folks were very high on that game. And I always thought to myself, it's Saturday at 1 o'clock. I don't know that it's going to do that well, but I've underestimated Caitlin Clark before in the ratings. But 1.7 million is a great number for the WNBA. And certainly an excellent number for the league, but not at the level people thought. The really important thing from that game is the lead out. LA and Vegas, 1.3 million. A WNBA game not involving Caitlin Clark that gets a million viewers. Haven't seen that since 2008, and haven't seen a bigger audience for the WNBA outside of Caitlin's first couple of games since 2004.
The thing that was really concerning after her opening game to me, and I don't think it's got enough attention in the media, was how awful the lead out was.
Yeah.
Mercury Aces. I think it was around 450,000 viewers, give or take. And that was after, you know, over 2 million for Clark's debut on ESPN2.
Yeah.
That was really shocking to me. I mean, the lead out was around what the average WNBA regular season game was from the prior season. So to not retain, you know, almost three quarters of the viewership from that game, very concerning. But this was quite the bounce back this weekend, going from 1.7 million for Caitlin Clark to down just to 1.3 million in the lead out. I think if you're the WNBA, you can rest a little easier knowing that, hey, maybe that opening night game was a bit of an anomaly on ESPN2, late tip off, some stuff that was going against that lead out being strong. This lead out might be more par for the course for the WNBA if they schedule correctly.
You make a lot of good points. I would also note for the Tuesday game last week, there was a studio show between the two games. Not sure why they wouldn't have just had them be back-to-back, but the second game started at, I guess it was 10 o'clock. First game started at 7:30. WNBA games last 2 hours, so you had a lot of studio in between. That might have hurt that game. But yeah, I mean, I think if you're the WNBA and you can get, you know, it's everybody's got to eat, right? And so it's a trickle-down effect, you know. Caitlin Clark has brought Reaganomics to the WNBA, and you want that her audiences to trickle down into the other games, and that happened on Saturday. Also, quickly, we have not talked about Scottie Scheffler's weekend yet. We will later, and Golf Channel specifically, but the final round of the PGA Championship, 10% increase in viewership. Still on the low side, third lowest since 2012, but 10% increase in viewership opposite an NBA Game 7 is pretty solid. Obviously, the Scheffler effect on Friday was significant, with very big increases for not just the primary broadcast on ESPN, but all of the shoulder programming. SportsCenter was up dramatically, up 52% for the 7 a.m. edition that started 12 minutes early to break the story. Triple-digit increases for SportsCenter on ESPN2. After that. So significant interest in Scheffler.
Not surprised to see that the PGA Championship up in viewership, partly due to that, partly I think it was a good finish down the stretch. Also, as you said, last year was a pretty weak number. So a double-digit viewership increase, not as significant as maybe it would have been had the number been stronger last year.
Yeah. Yeah, I think ultimately, you know, it's still a golf major that's not the Masters in an era where golf viewership is not necessarily great. You just got to deal with that. A couple of other notes from the weekend. The Preakness Stakes, 5.3 million. up from last year and actually the most watched in 3 years. So that's not too bad. It was a good race. I don't remember any of it, but it was a good race. I don't even know who won. I think the Mystic Dan came close to.
Yeah, no, a strong race for the Preakness. Not much else to say. You know, $5 million for horse racing, especially when NBC has, you know, a little bit less incentive to really advertise and market the Preakness, given they're only airing two of the three Triple Crown races now. Pretty strong.
Yeah. I think, it's horse racing in America in 2024. The fact that it draws as well as it does is miraculous. Won't draw this well forever, that's for sure.
Also, just, you know, a horrible day in Baltimore. You know, I noticed the crowd was pretty weak. Usually the infield is pretty packed for that event. As a Baltimore native, I'm familiar with that. But very empty at Pimlico. So it wasn't looking as great as it normally would on TV, although Pimlico is not the prettiest racetrack in America to begin with, but visually not very appealing this year.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a tough race because it's not the Derby and it's not the Belmont, where if you get a Triple Crown possibility, it's, you know, special. It's just kind of the middle child, the Jan Brady, the Eve Plum of this Triple Crown. I guess that does it for the ratings talk. Let's go ahead and get into the meat of the podcast this week. It's going to be a little bit of sports media criticism. So I wrote an article on Monday and that's gotten probably more response than most articles I've ever written, which is a critique of ESPN's NBA coverage in the context of its predecessor, NBC. And this piece was motivated by ESPN's broadcast of the Pacers-Knicks Game 7 on Sunday. I'm not the only person who saw this broadcast and felt like it was noticeably significant. Let's put it that way. This was something that a lot of people noticed. There was something off about this broadcast. I wrote my article. Andrew Marchand wrote an article that was published today in The Athletic about ESPN's lead broadcast team awful announcing. Questioned on Sunday whether it was a new low for NBA Countdown. And, you know, we don't coordinate. I don't coordinate with Marchand or Awful Announcing. These are all articles that I think we all watching had the same sensation of, this is bad enough that it merits an analysis. Let's just start from scratch, right? Let's just start from the top. The Knicks bias. Normally, when small market, and Indianapolis is not a small market, but normally when fans of teams that are smaller market teams complain about media bias, they're full of it. 9 times out of 10, they're full of it. This is the 10th occasion. This was ridiculous. And it was not just Stephen A. Smith, though that was the worst of it. The Stephen A. Knicks fandom this does not matter to people tuning into the game. I'm not tuning into the game to find out about Stephen A. Smith's Knicks fandom. I don't care. I don't think most people do. Even though Stephen A. is popular, save that stuff for First Take. That's where he's the show. The actual game is supposed to be the draw. So that was ridiculous. But I have to agree with other people who have noticed that the broadcast team of Breen, Doris Burke, and Reddick also really did not give the Pacers their due. Mike Breen is excellent. I'm a huge fan of Mike Breen. Actually, when I did the Pacers Knicks the other day, I was in the media space working on the site, and Mike Breen actually sat down, at the same table. Did not interact with him because, you know, you want to play it cool, right? You don't want to be one of the. I mean, I'm a professional working in a professional environment. I'm not going to be fanboying over Mike Breen while he's just trying to get in a pregame meal. It's a thrill just to see Mike Breen. He is a legend in this industry. So I'm a huge fan of his, but I'm also somebody who critiques sports media for a living. And I don't think he brought the kind of energy. If you wanted to say that he was disappointed that the Knicks lost, I think he was. I think it was obvious that he was disappointed that the Knicks lost. We've had Knick announcers doing NBA national games forever. Obviously, Marv Albert. We have, you know, tons of RSN guys doing national games. Breen cares deeply about the Knicks. I feel like he felt the disappointment. Having covered the team all year, what a dispiriting way to lose because everyone got hurt. and even Brunson breaking his hand. Yeah, man, that's it. Obviously he was bummed out. He brought great energy for the Nembhard three in game three, but that was not the same finality as the Knicks losing. And I don't think he brought what he needed to bring, okay, to that game. And he's also, as Andrew Marchand noted very correctly in his article, he is carrying this new team. You feel the points where Van Gundy or Jackson would normally say something. Green will say something and there's silence, but you know Van Gundy, especially Van Gundy, but Van Gundy or Jackson would have had something to say. Green is still teeing up Jeff and Mark, but they're not there. And, you know, I've said it before, Doris took a step back. I said that last year. Doris took a step back. I don't really know what happened, but she's not the same analyst that she was. Redick is a brilliant basketball mind. That's why the Lakers are going to take quite the risk here, I think, and potentially hire him as their new coach. He's a great basketball mind. He has a very harsh sounding monotone that is not great for TV. He sounds dour. Redick doesn't bring the requisite energy for TV that you need. And so Breen, this is beyond what LeBron had to do in 2018 and 2007, this level of carry job. And Mike can't always get there, right? So to me, that is, I put a lot of this at the feet of Dave Roberts, who came in when the Rachel Nichols, Maria Taylor thing happened, and he overhauled the entire studio. I don't particularly like the overhaul, but I do recognize that the studio needed to be overhauled. But he also overhauled the lead broadcast team for no reason. There was no need to do that. Now, I understand when they brought in Doc Rivers, they obviously expected to get at least one season out of him. Doc really, really did them a tremendous disservice. That's, you know, and I don't think Doc's going to get hired again. Like, I think Doc killed his TV career, because when you don't even make it through one season and you leave the broadcast team in a lurch like that, I don't think he's going to get hired again. Certainly not as a lead. Not as a lead. But when they brought in Doc, Doc is good enough to cover over all of these things. Even though he, Doris, and Mike still didn't have any chemistry. You know, they were there for a couple of months. They didn't have the time to build it, but they didn't have any chemistry. But this is not working. It's just plainly not working on the broadcast team side. But beyond anything else, you know, ESPN, as I said, has really failed to tell the story of the NBA in 20-something years broadcasting the league. And ESPN only knows how to tell its own stories. It only knows how to tell Stephen A's story. Well, you know, they didn't even really help us get to know the Knicks. You didn't even get to know the Knicks watching ESPN coverage. Tell us more about who these guys are and what they're doing and how they're trying to power through the physical limitations. And of course, you might want to tell us a little bit about the Indiana Pacers, because now you have them for four more games at least. And the Boston Celtics, they are not above blowing this series to the Indiana Pacers. They are not above that. I could easily see an outcome like what we saw last year, where an obviously inferior team comes into Boston and takes the first two games. The Celtics are absolutely capable of ushering the Indiana Pacers into the NBA Finals. So ESPN might want to start talking about Tyrese Haliburton.
There's clearly plenty of blame to go around, as you just laid out and as you pretty expertly laid out in your piece on Monday. The question I have for you, John, is why did ESPN go in this editorial direction? Because this is not just one game or one instance. This has been a shift over time, which you laid out in your article pretty well. It started early on, but it wasn't to this level, right? Now we're at the point where they are showing Stephen A. Smith walking into the game as if he's a player. And ESPN is the main character rather than the NBA. So how did we get here, and why is ESPN making these editorial decisions?
Well, I mean, ESPN has obviously always been obsessed with ESPN. Always. but especially over the past 25, 26 years. I mean, really, just since the big show, you know, I mean, ESPN has always been very interested in ESPN. They did a whole series about ESPN. You know, forget those guys have all the fun. There was a show, a sitcom called Sports Night about ESPN. It wasn't really ESPN, but you get the idea, right? It was based on SportsCenter.
Can I cut in real quick?
Sure.
I don't know if you saw this morning, but they just released an ESPN Plus docuseries about the origins of the debate format, television debate format, executive produced by Stephen A.
Yeah.
Did you see this?
No, I won't be watching it. The impact that this stuff has had, you know, you think about Morton Downey Jr. and all the purveyors of trash TV from the 1980s and 90s and the impact that they've had on our society, on our whole society, right? And I don't want to overstate it, but Embrace Debate, you know, you could trace Embrace Debate from sports to news and trace it from news to actual consequences on people's lives. I think it's disgusting. But that's just my opinion. I happen to have a particularly strong view about this form of media.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Look, when all is said and done, ESPN has, like I said, been more interested in ESPN than in the events that it airs. I don't think it's shocking that ESPN had to go out of house to save Monday Night Football. It had to go to get other people from other cultures, other sports media cultures, to come in to save Monday Night Football. The culture there is just not attuned to treating the games like they're the big event. Look, First State gets great numbers. It's unfortunate that it does, but it does. I mean, I say great numbers, you know. First Take can get great numbers. Like that Martin Luther King Day episode that had like 1.5 or 1.6 million viewers. That is a shockingly high number. On average, it's much lower than that, obviously.
Is this a conscious decision that you think they're making? Because I feel like if you were to, you know, talk to any one of these producers or, behind the scenes people at ESPN, programming people, et cetera, they would tell you that they want the focus to be the game. They're not looking for ESPN to be the main character here.
Right.
What is it systemically that causes this? Is it because they move people like David Roberts from the debate shows into the live broadcast portion of the company Is it as simple as that?
I think that's a big part of it. There's a lot of turf wars at ESPN. The Maria Taylor, Rachel Nichols thing was a turf war more than anything between the Norby School, of which Maria was a part, being a regular guest on Get Up, and the LA School, the John Skipper people, who, you know, obviously gained prominence during Skipper's tenure and were still there after he left. And the Norby School, of which Dave Roberts is a part, was always focused on that morning show style content, right? You move the needle by debating things, by saying things that get people's blood pressure up. I mean, this is the embraced debateification of ESPN NBA coverage. And it wasn't necessarily that the coverage was so great to begin with, but I knew the moment I saw, because I wasn't familiar with Dave Roberts, the moment I read what shows he was in control of when ESPN made this announcement in 2021, I knew it was going to happen. And it has happened exactly as I knew it would, which is a lot of Get Up, a lot of First Take, a lot of that morning show culture is now in the NBA. And of course, the NBA has always been really the primary source of content for those morning shows, even beyond the NFL. It resulted in a terrible broadcast. It resulted in probably the worst broadcast ESPN has done for the NBA since they had Mike Tirico and Joel Siegel previewing the summer movie season at halftime of Game 6 of the 2003 Finals.
It's interesting to me because just thinking about the value of ESPN, it's not in the morning shows or their studio content. It's in the live rights. Yeah. So you'd think they'd be financially incentivized to have these live broadcasts of games, you know, the airing of live sports be the main focus. But it almost seems as if they're using the games as a vehicle to promote their other talent, promote their other shows, when in reality, it should probably be the opposite.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. I think ESPN is using the live rights to promote ESPN. I mean, obviously, you use live rights to promote your programming in general. That's why they have all those shows after the Super Bowl, right? They don't do a Super Bowl post-game show, even though most of the people watching the Super Bowl want that. They give you some terrible reality show they're going to cancel in 5 weeks. There's nothing necessarily wrong with using live sports to promote your stuff. But, I mean, you also have to promote the game. Like, you can't let the promotion of your other programming supersede what people are tuning in for. And that has happened. Stephen A, obviously, you know, he's bigger than he's ever been. I don't see the criticism that ESPN has gotten is fair. I got a little pushback. But the fact that, again, I'm not sure I've ever written an article that has been as well received as the one that I wrote yesterday. And there are similar articles that have been written by Marchand, by Awful Announcing. It is obvious that what ESPN is doing is not working for the great majority of at least the people who are saying something about it. And I also don't think, I mean, obviously the PGA Championship played a role, but it's weird that a Game 7 involving the New York Knicks had only 6.5 million viewers. It wasn't that big of a blowout. The Pacers were up by 40 or even 30. That game was still somewhat up for grabs into the fourth quarter. And it is weird that had 6.4 million viewers on broadcast television, while the game on cable, remember what the NBA is doing with this new deal. They're saying we want broadcast network exposure, not cable. Well, cable got 8.4 million for Minnesota-Denver. Now, that's been the biggest series of the second round. But Indiana-New York is New York. All the hype about the Knicks. I want to be clear about something. I'm not sure how it works. I believe that whenever there's two game sevens from each conference, the network that carries the conference final will carry the game seven from that conference. So maybe ESPN would have chosen Minnesota-Denver if it had had the opportunity. But since Pacers-Knicks was there, they couldn't choose it. I don't know. But I'm going under the assumption that Pacers-Knicks was viewed as the marquee game beyond Minnesota-Denver. And it came up 2 million viewers short. Do I think that's because people were turned off by Stephen A. Smith? No, I don't. But I do think that when you fail to promote the players and teams, you get apathy from the viewers. If you want people to tune in, you have to give them a reason to tune in. And Stephen A. Smith yelling alongside Spike Lee is not a reason why people tune in to watch basketball games. It's why people tune in to watch First Take. But First Take is not the NBA. And the NBA is not First Take. And I'm not quite sure Dave Roberts believes that.
Is there a way back for ESPN? Can they claw their way back to, you know, spotlighting the players, the game, the storylines, rather than, you know, kind of the mess they're in right now, where they can't even, you know, produce a proper game without being accused of biases and, you know, self-promotion and all the other stuff?
No. No. ESPN is what it is. It's going to get worse, not better. And they are proud of what they're doing. That's why they did a whole documentary about it. They have pride in their work, which is a shame because they shouldn't. There is no way back for ESPN. The John Skipper era, they were taking risks and doing interesting things, and it wasn't for everybody. I've said before, John Skipper ESPN is ESPN for like left-leaning people in grad school, right? Which is not the ESPN target demo. That's why, I mean, that's what Meadowlark Media is. Their motto should be left-leaning grad school sports, okay? But, you know, obviously I feel like the quality of ESPN at least was balanced a little bit more under Skipper. But no, they're going to get worse. There's no doubt in my mind. And their NBA coverage is going to get worse too. I think they're going to double down. I don't think there's any kind of inward reflection over there. I think as you move forward, there's 11 more years of this. I mean, 12 really, because this current deal goes another season. The impact that ESPN has had on the NBA has been profoundly negative, profoundly. The embrace debate has really only served to discredit every NBA player, because you can't, once your greatness is being debated, it will always be undermined. This is not what a partner does. A partner does not trash the product. You can go so far back, we're talking about not Pete Rozelle, we're talking about Bert Bell, who preceded Pete Rozelle as the president, I don't think he was commissioner at that time, of the NFL. And Bert Bell said, and I quote, broadcasters are salesmen for football. You've never heard of a salesman saying his product was no good, did you? Well, we don't want any of our broadcasters implying that about football. To be sure, ESPN is not the place you're going to go to hear people talk down the NBA. They're not going to trash the league. But they trash the league's primary product, the players, incessantly. They are building up Anthony Edwards for the sole purpose of tearing him down if he fails. This is time and time again. Even Kobe Bryant dealt with it. Generations of players that ESPN has covered have been really painted as enormous failures, despite incredible accomplishments and accolades. And that's the embrace debate effect. And would I say that ESPN has been bad for the NBA? Yes, profoundly.
Does the NBA risk, you know, really a substantial decline if the coverage continues in such a negative light? Or does the NBA just have, you know, it's basketball, right? It's the second most popular sport in America. There's a baseline level of people that are going to watch no matter who's broadcasting the games, what they talk about on their debate shows.
Yeah, I think the NBA will be fine. I mean, you got to remember the bar keeps getting lower and lower and lower for success. I mean, look, the state of TV is what it is. The NBA is going to get $75 billion in these next deals. So really, that's one of the reasons why we'll continue. None of this is having any kind of tangible impact. It's all psychic. It's all on the enjoyment of the game. But you can watch something while not enjoying it. It happens all the time. You watch something out of habit. You watch it because it's on. And you watch it because you're told you should watch it.
Well, I encourage everyone listening, if they haven't already, to go and read this article. Also highlights, you know, NBC's era, the NBA on NBC, and how that led into the current iteration of ESPN's NBA coverage.
Just quickly, before we move on to the next topic, I will say my hope is that if NBC does get in, that NBC will get a lot of those Game 7s, those weekend Game 7s that have been airing on ABC. So we at least get a break from ESPN on those. Before we go, we got to talk about Scottie Scheffler. And we'll really only talk about the Golf Channel aspect. We're not going to get into the police discussion. I will say, if the police are doing that to Scottie Scheffler, I cannot imagine what it's like to not be Scottie Scheffler and live in Louisville, Kentucky. But that's another story for another day. Let's talk about the fact that Golf Channel did not discuss this topic live. Their excuse is that they did not have the ability to do any coverage from the PGA because ESPN had exclusive rights. Nonsense. Drew, you are the golf expert. I will bring you in.
Yeah, I mean, that is complete nonsense. I mean, even in their statement to Sports Business Journal, they kind of contradicted that, you know, notion that they couldn't do anything by saying, well, we didn't even have anyone ready to go live on site or in our Stamford, Connecticut headquarters anyway. So, you know, what can you expect from us? We weren't prepared until that evening when they were scheduled to go live after the round with their live from studio show. It, you know, it's absolutely outrageous, and it's pathetic for the sport of golf that the channel dedicated to the sport doesn't even have people on site ready to go live. I mean, you don't need that much to go live from, you know, Valhalla. You need one reporter and a, you know, and a crew there and a live view pack, right? Like, this is not a huge undertaking, yep, literally, to have one person live from the golf course cut into whatever coverage you have of the LPGA tour or the European LPGA tour that morning to update on the biggest story in sports that day. Really, I mean, just goes to show you, this is, you know, this is one of the last utilities of linear television, right? The ability to cover breaking news stories as they happen. Really one of the only reasons to have a cable subscription at this point, because any other type of content you can get elsewhere doesn't necessarily have to be live. This type of content is why you have Golf Channel, and to not go live and cover the story until that evening after play is concluded, it's a pox on the entire operation over there at Golf Channel.
Yeah, no, you make excellent points. One, you know, I've talked about ESPN's NBA coverage and how dreadful it is. I'll give ESPN a cookie here for Jeff Darlington, who did an excellent job. Probably, you know, Jeff Darlington, you know, as a black man, I'm not approaching the police saying, hey, guys, what are you doing? Jeff's very lucky they didn't. I mean, not only that they didn't arrest him, that they didn't like rough him up. Jeff is very fortunate that that was not a bad situation for him, but he did a great job. Covering that, he was excellent on it, a real showcase for him. And he's not a golf reporter, really. He's an NFL guy, did the Masters. He did a great job. ESPN was great coming on here early. They were excellent. That was when ESPN is at its best. You'll notice that ESPN at its best generally does not involve Stephen A. Smith yelling about things.
Yeah, they went above and beyond here. And it's not like the PGA Championship is the Masters, right? This is probably the lowest on the rung of the major championships. But for ESPN to have the resources that they did live on site, sending guys like Jeff Darlington that aren't even golf reporters to cover the event, shows that they're willing to invest. And, you know, it was, of course, fortunate for Jeff Darlington to be in the right place at the right time, to capture that video and report on the circumstances thereafter. But that doesn't happen unless ESPN is willing to invest in sending extra reporters, sending extra crews, having the preparedness and the wherewithal to go live before their coverage window even starts to cover this story. And ESPN at its core is a news gathering operation. This is, you know, the origins of ESPN is news, but for sports, right?
Yeah.
It is only recently that they have gone away from that. And to know that they operationally can still pull that off is encouraging, but it also goes to show that the bar has been lowered.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're not in the Bob Lee era anymore. You know, we're not even in the Jeremy Schapp era. So anytime you get a little bit of that, a little bit of what ESPN used to be, man, we talk about MTV, we talk about, you know, Discovery Channel. ESPN is in the same category, man, when you think about where it used to be and where it is. I will say this before we go. The one thing that could improve ESPN's NBA coverage is if Adam Silver says something about it. Adam Silver would never jeopardize $2.6 billion for any coverage-related concern. But he can say, you want the finals and a conference final every year? Okay. We want assurances that the coverage will be flattering to us. The NFL was able to force ESPN to treat it right. Now, granted, the NFL's quarrel with ESPN was that ESPN was reporting accurately about scandals in the league. So the NFL pulling rank was actually not a very good thing. But the NFL was able to say, we own you, not the other way around. You will cover us as we would like to be covered, or you will suffer the consequences. The NBA doesn't have that kind of leverage, but it does right now. You know, I know ESPN probably bumped their bid up from maybe 2.1 billion or something to 2.6 to get the finals every year. But if Comcast is willing to spend the kind of money it's spending to get TNT's B package, I think the NBA should very seriously, regardless of ESPN's coverage, the NBA needs to be getting more for that finals exclusivity. If ESPN is going to get this kind of value, the finals every year, a conference final every year, then the NBA needs to have more control over the product that ESPN is putting out there. David Stern, he would have read them the riot act for that embarrassing, disgraceful performance on Sunday.
Yeah, this is actually something I wanted to talk about. Maybe we can talk about it a bit next week, but you know, it's been very mum on the official announcement front on these NBA rights deals. Clearly there's stuff still going on and being sorted out behind the scenes. We've obviously seen plenty of reporting about Warner Brothers Discovery, their matching rights, etc. But I agree. I think, especially given NBC's bid, there's a potential here for the NBA to, you know, lay the hammer down and say, you know, this is what we want. If you want exclusivity for the finals, I think that's going to be something that is still being discussed over there.
If you're getting $75 billion and $7 billion a year, you have leverage. Use it. Use that leverage. Because ESPN is mismanaging the NBA. We are in year 21. Now, it hasn't been bad for all 21 years. But when you're in year 21 and you're getting a broadcast like we saw the other day, the NBA, Adam Silver, needs to do something about it.
Well, John, really eye-opening episode here. We've talked a lot in the past about ESPN's, you know, kind of dereliction of duty when it comes to their NBA broadcasts. No better example of that than this past weekend. Any closing thoughts before closing out the podcast?
No, not really. You know, I really hope that there's some level of consequence for what we saw. I mean, I just think that was for a game 7 involving the Knicks. I mean, that was really, really bad. But for now, this has been the Sports Media Watch podcast. Fingers crossed that that Adam Silver actually does something about his very problematic A partner. Something must be done. We'll be back here next week with more stuff.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.